You're listening to podcasts from the Congressional Internet Caucus Advisory Committee, www.netcaucus.org.
Welcome, everybody. My name is Tim Lorton. I'm the Executive Director of the Congressional Internet Caucus Advisory Committee. For those of you who don't know what the Congressional Internet Caucus Advisory Committee is, it actually is about a year older than ICANN itself. It was created in 1996 in the advent of the Telecommunications Act of 1996. We do not, as an organization, take any positions on policy or legislation or regulation. We simply try to do balanced and fair briefings on issues of interest to Congress, on internet technology and policy, and we've been doing so since 1986. Today's briefing is called Influencing ICANN, What Role Will Governments Have Over Internet Domain Functions? This is a follow-up to a briefing we did in October 1st of 2009 called The Future of U.S. Government's Role in ICANN, Internet Addressing and Internet Governance. And we've done about three other briefings on internet governance in general throughout the years, which is an issue that increases in importance as the internet grows into a truly global medium. Today we've assembled a panel of folks from a variety of different constituencies. I'm actually really thrilled, and I want to thank ICANN for actually being here and speaking to all of you, so I really appreciate their participation. I'll introduce the panelists in just a second. One thing I probably should do is try to give an orientation, a brief orientation for those of you who are familiar with ICANN. James gave you a little bit of introduction of what ICANN is. Basically, where we are today, from October 1st of 2009, is that ICANN just had a series of meetings with its constituencies, made some important decisions in San Francisco this past week. And the question for Congress is, well, what role do world governments have in ICANN, and how is this process moving along in our best interests? So ICANN is the way that our domain name system is run, the technical functions. .org, .net, .com, .biz, those are top-level domain names. All this stuff gets very complicated, I don't understand it at all, so which is perfect for me to be a moderator. But the idea is that ICANN was created in 1997, and before that its functions for internet domain name addressing were handled by this academic named John Pistel at the University of Southern California. He looked like Father Christmas, and he basically, from his office, he ran all the technical functions for the domain name system. At that will, ICANN, it was obvious that it couldn't go on that way. He actually passed away as well. So ICANN was created to kind of manage those functions. By quirk of the fact that the U.S. government actually had some jurisdiction over the domain name system, the idea was that in these memorandums of understanding, these joint project agreements, these other documents, the U.S. government, as embodied in the Department of Commerce, has been trying to release control over the major functions of the domain name system over the last probably 14 years, and been trying to get ICANN to take on those things. October 1st of 2009, there was this kind of affirmation of commitment, which was pretty much what Steve Del Bianco last year called the Independence Day for ICANN. And I think Steve can explain more about what that means, but basically, the U.S. government's kind of control over the domain name functions was ceded to ICANN, and it stands alone in that function. So we're here today because world governments are now saying, well, we want a little bit more say in what happens, or we want to have some say in what happens within domain name addressing, because it's important for a variety of different reasons, whether you're an intellectual property holder, trademarks, copyright, whether you're a world government out there that doesn't like certain content, and just the security and stability of the internet. World governments seem to have an interest in that. With the global medium being what it is and the engine of commerce, communications, and democracy, these issues are extremely important, even more so than we would have imagined 15 years ago when the Congressional Internet Caucus was created. The events in Egypt, Tunisia, and now what's going on in Libya, and the importance of internet communication to promote democracy and highlights how truly important these things are. So, with that horrible introduction, I'm going to introduce our panelists. And just got a little bit on the list, and I'd like to ask for like 3 to 5 minute perspectives on the panel and where we're going with regard to the issuance of more top-level domain names and some of the decisions that we made this past week in San Francisco. Jamie Hetham, who is with ICANN, and if you could explain that, I would appreciate it, because I always set up. Jamie has worked in a variety of functions from the Consumer Electronics Association to Yahoo and the Communications Commission. And so he has an amazing background. Christina Rosette from the Special Counsel of Covington and Burling. She and her practice there centers around domain issues as well as trademark and intellectual property. Steve Del Bianco is the Executive Director of MetChoice. And Steve can also explain his participation in the ICANN process. And then Krista Kapik from Bus Registry International, which is an Australian registry and registrar. So with that, let me introduce Jamie Hudlin from ICANN. Just a few minutes on ICANN and this whole process and what's all happening.
Thanks, Tim. That was actually a pretty good overview. Just added a couple things. To understand a little bit better, shed a little bit more light on the role of governments within ICANN, you have to go back to the beginning. As you said, the millions of functions that we perform were done under contract between DARPA and the University of Southern California. For various reasons, USC no longer wanted to perform these functions, probably because there's a lot of paper on it. And so the administration had a choice, and this is an important administration, as to how to delegate responsibility for these technical functions. One choice was to give it to a U.S. government agency like the Federal Communications Commission. Another choice was to give it to a UN or intergovernmental organization such as the International Telecommunications Union. And for a variety of reasons, the U.S. government and others didn't think that was a good idea. So they went with the third option, which was you create an new model, a private sector-led, bottom-up, multi-stakeholder organization that would be in charge of these functions, coordinate some of these technical functions that we'll talk about in a second, as well as be responsible for developing the policies surrounding it. An important constituent in this organization is the Governmental Advisory Committee. The Governmental Advisory Committee is formally established in ICANN's bylaws and plays an important role in advising the board on issues related to public policy. There are other advisory committees within the ICANN structure. Only the CAC has the Governmental Advisory Committee of the CAC has the responsibility of providing advice that the board must consider in making its decisions. So under our bylaws, if the CAC provides the board advice, the board must either take that advice and follow it, or if it's going to disagree with it, meet with the CAC and try to reach an accommodation and agreement. And if you can't reach agreement, the board then can still go forward with its decision, but it has to explain its rationale. There are governments around the world who are unhappy with this setup for different reasons. There are some governments who very much would prefer this to go into an international intergovernmental organization like the UN or ITU, where governments around the world would have control of their and would make the policy. Other governments are uncomfortable with the private sector that exists within ICANN. And at the very least, we want the CAC to have almost a veto and have the board actually report to the CAC. And then there's this vast middle range of the Russian governments. The Western governments very much support the ICANN model and see the CAC creates the greatest opportunity for innovation problems on the internet. There are a handful of countries, some major governments on the other side, would rather gas bill, and developing low-income countries who have not declared public health. So, as pointed out in San Francisco, we made some decisions. We had Dr. Bless. We had gotten a communique from the Act. My father did a little bit, and the board approved the application and put out a 20-page rationale for that decision, explaining why it went the way it did, and where the settlement in the area where it never did have advice. It also continued more meetings with the Governmental Advisory Committee and the launch of new top-level domains. Top-level domains are like .com to the right of the dot. And since 2005, ICANN and all the state community have been working on increasing competition and innovation in that space. We had 3 days of meetings with the GAP in Brussels in February. We devoted to 5 days of meetings in San Francisco to the GAP. We made some progress. We're going to have at least one more meeting with the GAP in April. And the tentative timeline we have for voting on the infection utilities in June for our meetings.
Great. And I do really want to hear how much I appreciate your appearing today and helping us understand this, as well as everybody. You've been traveling all over the world the past couple of months, so I really appreciate you being here, Krista, from your perspective. And, you know, I think some of the congressional discussion around ICANN and top level domain names are driven by intellectual property issues. Jamie mentioned appropriately that some of the copyright and trademark holders were making it very difficult for USC to kind of manage this, like John Hulstell had done before. So can you just give your perspective on that side of the equation?
Sure, absolutely. And just by way of background, I represent the intellectual property constituency on ICANN's generic name supporting organization, referred to as the GNSO Council, and that's the policy council that, after policy recommendations are developed in this bottoms-up multi-stakeholder process, they come to the council, we review them, and vote on them. And as a general matter, anything that we vote on as a policy recommendation with a supermajority vote, absent some extenuating circumstances, the ICANN board also has to approve those recommendations. So obviously, given my role in that process, I am focused primarily on the interests of intellectual property owners, and in this context, so ICANN, we're talking primarily copyright and trademark owners. And while I think it's probably safe to say that within the intellectual property constituency, there is some agreement that new GTLDs may introduce competition and innovation, for the most part, the members of our constituency and owners of brands and owners of copyright rights are more concerned about the massive potential for cyber squatting and infringement that you could see in along with the introduction of new GTLDs if certain protections are not put in place. So we've been working very hard to try and do what we can to ensure that the rollout through the original policy development process, through some subsequent processes, includes protections that will minimize some of that additional cost and burden that will be imposed on owners of intellectual property rights through this rollout. I think our constituency probably has a unique view on the role of governments in the sense that, as Jamie pointed out, the role of the governmental advisory committee is to provide advice to the board on issues of public policy, as well as to the extent that ICANN's activities interact with various laws and intergovernmental arrangements. And as we all know, the rights of trademark owners and rights of copyright owners, those are all protected by national law, and in some cases on top of that, international treaty. And I think what's unique about the policy development process is that because it bottoms up, because it's, for the most part, all volunteer working groups, we don't necessarily have, in my personal view, a process that's addition to this one, in which the use of governance may be entitled to more deference than they would in perhaps other aspects. And we're cautiously optimistic that the outcome in Singapore will reflect that the board has, in fact, taken on some of the advice of the Act with regards to additional trademark protections about the agency.
Well, as a nonprofit, we are also a trademark holder. And we also have many domain names. In fact, my board of directors put out a big line item on my budget at my last board meeting. And it was a significant increase in network usage, and we realized that it was, we had to renew all the domain names. We had like 30 domain names that we had to renew. And we have netcaucus.org, netcaucus.net, and then we have a variety of URLs. So that's certainly, that's an interesting perspective. And Steve, you were here 2.5 years ago. You said that October 1st, 2009 was ICANN's Independence Day. We've also been concerned about the specter of other intergovernmental organizations trying to seize certain functions of the Internet, namely the UN and the ITU. Can you speak to that? Just one second.
Now, even declaring independence is easy. It's keeping it. Sometimes it's a challenge. But are all of you sufficiently confused now that we ought to have a tiny bit of context, a tiny bit of maybe an explanation of all the acronyms? Something I put on your chairs, the charts with the glossary, and put these charts up front, because this is a world of the most bizarre complexity that we're in. In 1939, Mr. Churchill said about Russia, he said, quote, "I can't forecast their actions. It's a riddle wrapped in a mystery and sign an enigma. But if Churchill saw the world and I can, he'd say the same thing." But he'd add, "Oh, and it's also obscured by acronyms." Because the ICANN world is all about acronyms. At least with Russia, KGB had something in ICANN's world. All of the acronyms actually are in English. And we still don't know what they mean. Because we have to figure out the context of how they all interact. So I put a glossary on your chairs, explaining just on one page what all these terms mean. And then on the charts and on your chairs, I put a timeline to give you some sense of how we get here. Because a lot of you know that the DoD started the Internet 40 years ago in the early 90s. The U.S. allowed commercial use in the late 90s. President Clinton's administration said, let's internationalize this great gift called the Internet. Oh, but along the way, let's make sure that the private sector maintains a leadership role, because it's, after all, the private sector putting all the money and building out the content and commerce and the infrastructure that makes the Internet work. Fabulous innovation, and we're still trying to preserve that today. It's not just independence from, say, the U.S. government role, but it's independence from all governments. The only other chart I had was sort of a context chart, putting ICANN at the center. Sort of unfortunately, at the center, it's not meant to be a target as much as a point of a conversation. Currently, there's a lot of tension, and it's roughly in balance. It is a very tense balance today. And all of us who are on the panel today fit into that. Jamie, for instance, works for ICANN in the center. Christina represents registrars, the companies who put up content and commerce, so I want to be sure that their customers aren't defrauded or fooled by websites that pretend to be, but they're not. That's a registrar number. Krista is both a registry and a registrar, so she has contracts that they execute with ICANN. That's the bottom line. And for my part, I have members of that choice that are both registries and registrants. And our real goal is to make sure that we preserve the integrity and the availability of the Internet, and especially preserve that whole private sector role. And as Tim asked, what's the real threat to the private sector role? Along that time, by once governments figured out how important the Internet was, roughly 2005 or so, they came to the conclusion that the Internet is pretty important. Anything that's important is better be run by governments. And so the parallel track with the United Nations, which is where governments do their work, is in parallel with this whole private sector model that we launched here at ICANN. I don't know that those lines are going to stay parallel or diverge or stretch into each other, which would be the worst of all worlds, but we currently have some tension because China has been asking the United Nations to take a much bolder role in asserting their control over critical Internet resources. I'll just read you one quote. They demanded last summer that the UN reform this Internet Governance Forum of the UN. First, the control of the future IGF should focus on how to solve the issue of unilateral control of critical Internet resources. So I'll translate. Unilateral control is the fact that the USA, the U.S. government, controls the INF function contract and the affirmation of commitments. Critical Internet resources, well, that means IP addresses, web servers, and generated manages the internet and DNS management. So China has a lot of voting power today at the UN, and they've convinced a lot of their allies to begin to put that pressure on. But I think so far the Triple X decision shows that in the absence of a consensus from all the governments, ICANN will try to follow its processes and will try to stick with a private sector-led management. So they've declared independence over a year and a half ago, and I think that 3 days ago they showed that they really intend to stay independent.
Thank you, Steve. Christopher Papak from Haas Register.
Thank you, Tim. So Haas Registry International is both an ICANN-accredited registrar and a registry as well. And Tim wanted to bring a little international exposure to this particular conversation. While it's probably obvious by my accent that I'm not Australian, the company is based in Australia, and I'm based in the U.S. office here. So we're registries, we really act mostly as a registry. What we do, the first thing that we do, when we first entered this industry, is that we run the AU domain space. So you've got your .com, .net, .org, et cetera, which are considered generic top-level domains. And you have the countries around the world that all have their own extensions as well, which are the country code top-level domains. And there's a chart, actually, that's brought that I'm going to this way here. So this gives you a little sort of graphic context on the two spaces. And so over here on the right hand, top right quadrant of the box, Haas Registry runs, as I said, the AU's namespace. We also, our software is also running ccTLDs in the Middle East. So right now we're running .ae, which is the United Arab Emirates. And we're rolling out Qatar right now, and we'll soon be rolling out Oman. And so where this fits into all of this is that, in addition to, we're actually going to talk about those right now. So you have your ccTLDs in these ASCII characters, the letters of the alphabet the Latin characters are familiar with. But when you go to the Middle East, they don't use Latin characters. They typically communicate in Arabic or some other language. And up until recently, you weren't able to articulate those characters in a browser on the web. And so through the ICANN process, that technology was developed and the policies around it were developed. And now we're actually, our registry is now running, our software is running the AE IDN. So it's Arabic characters for .AE, and we're rolling out in the other two countries, Qatar and Oman as well. And so we're this fits into the new TLD discussion is that what we have specialized in over the years, and I don't need this to be an Haas Registry commercial, it's not, it's more to explain how we've taken policies. We sit down with the various stakeholders, the Australian government, the Australian regulatory body, which is similar to what ICANN is in the generic space. We sit down with the AE government, the Oman government, and their various stakeholders, and we do a needs analysis with them and understand what they're trying to do with that particular namespace. And then we write the policies that will govern that namespace and then roll out the TLD for them. So when you look at new gTLDs and the opportunity that exists there, the same type of model sort of exists in the ICANN space and is what registries, potential registries, assuming move forward with new TLDs, are also trying to do. They're looking at specific sets of consumers and internet users that want to have a space of their own. So whether it's fishermen or foodies or people who like to drink wine or New York City residents, those types of policies and those communities can be set up at the top level as well, and they can have their own space. So, keeping in mind that there is a defined process that's established at ICANN and that has to be followed, which is what we're going through right now. So, thank you.
Thank you, Krista. I think the question for the panel is what influence will governments have in this process? As we've discussed, ICANN is kind of a unique organization. There aren't any that I know of international bodies that also take input from governments to make good decision making. I can't think of a single one. There's all sorts of different standards bodies out there, each country tries to regulate the network the way it sees fits with its own borders, via the Federal Communications Commission or Trade Commission and others. But it is kind of a unique animal. And the last time we did this in 2009, one of the panelists said, well, it's the plumbing of the internet. It's the plumbing, and generally Congress and policymakers don't really care as long as the water's flowing and everything's fine. And the question is, when the flooding goes wrong and there's leaks coming out from the ceiling, it's in the government's interest to kind of step in and pay attention. So today, I guess the question is, what's been going on at ICANN, and is the question of plumbing fine, or is there something wrong? As, I don't think we've really gone into detail, but the government advisory committee, as Steve and Jamie described it, is basically the whole government as an advice body in ICANN. And in many ways, they said to ICANN, or forgive me if I'm misarticulating this, they want to have more say, or at least have some sort of say to a certain extent over the issuance of topical domain names and a variety of features. And ICANN made some significant decisions this past week that kind of define the government's role going forward. Can I ask you guys to comment on that? And with regard to the question for Congress, is the plumbing okay? And all of the same okay, Jamie?
So one of ICANN's primary missions is to ensure the security and stability of the single interoperable internet. And when people think of the internet, they think about this incredible environment for innovation, competition. Anyone can get on, anyone can create a website, buy content, reach anyone. It's also in the world. And most of the internet is very distributed. The one part that's not is the naming of address. And there does need to be a hierarchy so that when you go to, when you want to go to Google.com or Crunch.com, if you get to that website, that means that's a unique IP address. So I think the internet is the main system and the function we provide are provided in a secure and safe manner, and that's reflected by our ability to get on the internet. The your other question about the DAC was I don't know that anyone in the DAC is asking for a different role than the one it has now. They provided advice that will take very much into consideration. And there's been extensive consultation continuing on MGPLDs. On MGPLDs, they provided a scorecard of 12 major points. We broke that down further into 80 points for each one of those, and figuring out where we agree mostly and where we disagree, and are focusing at this point on where we disagree to try to get.
Well, let me just back up a little bit, because you haven't even just mentioned that. This first mention of this .xxx domain name being issued, and that's what happened last week, is that right?
That's right.
So can you explain a little bit about what that is as far as
Sure. So in 2003, ICANN started as a round of applications for sponsored top-level domains. Sponsored top-level domains were ones that were the sponsor of the domain sets the policies for that and not ICANN. And there were a number that were approved. ICM submitted an application for .xxx. We eventually declined that application in 2007. ICM, the sponsor, initiated our most robust review process, which is an independent review panel, essentially a panel of three arbitrators, although their decisions are non-binding. And in February of last year, they came down with their decision saying ICANN had not followed its rules and processes that acted in a neutral manner in declining the application. And we accepted that opinion. said, well, there are members who neither endorse nor oppose the introduction of Patrick Glass. Others are emphatically opposed. So you have this, you know, lack of consensus among the CAC of whether or not to oppose. Some are very opposed. Others are neutral. Prior to the vote, the U.S. said that it did not have a position on there. So the U.S. didn't work through the gap. So the U.S. is somewhere either, they have not clarified specifically whether they were either neither endorsed nor opposed or strongly opposed. Since the decision, Assistant Secretary Strickland was disappointed by the detection board in the decision. But I wanted to. Correct the misimpression that the GAC said, I can't do this. This violates public policy. Instead, it reflected a plurality of views, which was not connected. The rest of the ICR decision, the Sonic Age rationale for it, goes into great detail. There's one of each of the points
let me also be clear that this is a subject of a Saturday morning running club. The zoning of adult material on the internet as a result of this decision. The fact is that this is just the creation of a top-level domain name that's .xxx. At the moment, no one is forced to be in it, and no one is forced to not allow access to it. Is that right?
That's correct.
So the government's role, as of this morning, have not taken a position on what they would do. It'll take several months of this registry to have in mind.
That's right.
My understanding, though, is that 40, somebody, I saw on Twitter that 40, within like 24 hours, 40,000 .xxx domains will register, could register in anticipation of this registry to have in mind. So it seems like somebody's anticipating that there's going to be a lot of activity there. This is strictly has been noted, and we did invite Mr. Strickland to speak today. He declined our invitation. I think we'll be hearing more from him later. It's quite sad that they're not here to articulate the U.S. position, even though it's hard to understand, based on communicating, based on Mr. Strickland's statements, where the Department of Commerce, the U.S. government is. But he did say there, at this point, that I can go in fair advice of governments worldwide, including the U.S., he says, which is interesting. And then he goes on to say that this decision goes against the global interest and all of them who are more interested in blocking by governments that undermine the stability and the security there. So I've been, .xxx thing, I was told it's not about .xxx, it's really a care and coal mine for other issues coming down the pike, other top-level domain names that people with content for which they can imagine, like .nazi, .mohammed, you name it. Going forward, what's the, is this a care and coal mine?
Topic out there on Friday. But I think a little perspective again would help, because I want you to understand that XXX isn't about X-rated content at all. The internet's already got plenty of that. You know, 12% of websites have adult content. You know, fully one quarter of the searches that people perform are on sexually oriented terms. That stuff is already there. All that the XXX decision on Friday did was it awarded to one company, a label maker. That company, ICM, was handed by ICANN, a label maker. And they're the only ones on the planet that can print labels that end in .xxx. So those people that line up the print register, walk up to the cash register, give the company some money, and they will punch out a label that ends in .xxx. You punch that label off, and then you get to stick that label on website pages you already have. So it doesn't bring new content to the internet. It puts new labels on the content that's there. And if those new labels stimulate new behavior by people, it could end up driving the way content changes. Now, there was a concern expressed about internet instability, and that was because it will be that a country would block everything that ends in .xxx as an easier way to block illegal, in this country, adult content. Saudi Arabia, for instance, pornography is illegal. The Saudi embassy said on Friday that he's fine with triple X because that will concentrate the adult content and we're going to block it. Today you probably know that in China, Facebook.com, YouTube.com, LinkedIn.com block
in China.
So whether that was content.facebook, content.youtube, content.linkedin, it's simply blocking content. You can block it at the second level to the left of the dot. You can block it at the top level. And I think that the XXX decision shows that the U.S. government doesn't really control what ICANN does, and that's very, very helpful. I don't want to give China the excuse that they're looking for to push for a change in the way the private sector manages ICANN.
Christine?
I would say that it is, and I am looking at it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I actually think it in a much more important way, because assuming that you start off from the points that Jamie was making, that assuming that you agree that the government is going to give a plurality of advice to the ICANN on Dr. Lex, you cannot say that for major utilities, that the gap is between the very unified voice on the key scorecard issues. And not only have they said, we are advising the board that this particular aspect of the UGTLD policy raises issues for us, but also, here's how we think you should fix it. So I think because you are starting out from a very different perspective, and you also, I think for the first time, as far as I know, the GAC has actually been providing very specific concrete alternatives as opposed to just saying, we object. I think it's really put a much greater burden on ICANN to seriously and thoughtfully consider not only the positions the GAC has taken, but the alternatives that they put forward. And I can certainly say that I'm pleased to see that if you look at the scorecard breakdown of the 80 points, I'm sure Jamie's got the numbers memorized, I don't. But it works out that you've got about a third of them so far where the GAC are in agreement. There's roughly a third where there is a very strong disagreement, and about a third where the board agrees in principle, but it's working out the implementation. And frankly, that's what's really been the struggle over the past few years of the implementation. So I absolutely think that this is a very important.
So you think, as a general manager, you think the government should have at least a little more influence with ICANN?
I think it depends on the particular subject matter in each component of the UGTLD program. I think that there are probably areas, particularly relating to the technical aspects of it, in which the folks at ICANN, I suspect, have got the much greater expertise and get easily accessible. I mean, and that, I think, is another problem that we've seen as this process is drawn out, is you have the board and the GAC meeting like they did in Brussels, and board members saying, well, what about this point? What about that point? What about this point? And the GAC representatives are not subject matter experts in trademarks and copyrights and consumer protection and antitrust. They really are the liaison. So I think that structure and some of the difficulties in communicating, I think it resulted in everyone coming back and saying, okay, we didn't do this very well. This and kind of going forward with new policies, we need to make sure that they're implemented more clearly. But to get back to your specific question, I would say absolutely there are some areas in which I think the GAC advice should be entitled to greater deference than it seems to be in so far.
And it seems basically saying that, you know, as long as the U.S. doesn't have control, that's a good thing, because the local government's so not saying anyone but the U.N. money is a good thing. So what do you call this?
So I think the XXX decision is... So for registries and for registrars, and for everybody, really, the ICANN model has been well-defined and exists, and there's a set of processes that we go through, starting at the very base level with the working groups that propose policy up to the council that then proposes it to the board, and you get these advisory committees, the government advisory committee, and the hot topic right now, providing their perspective on these policies. And so in respect to XXX and then that parlaying into UTLDs, there's a process that's been followed, and the ICANN took GAC advice, or Government Advisory Committee advice, on XXX, and they commented back, you know, they made their decision, they took that under consideration, made their decision, and sent that back. When you look at the new TLD process, the same thing is going on there as well. So this, and that is what's going on right now with respect to utilities and where it fits into this.
So going forward, as far as how our plumbing is working or is going to work, I think the question is, will it continue to work now? There are doomsday scenarios that have been added on Twitter. I've heard a few people actually give different problems that may arise from this. I think one thing that was compelling was George Sadowski, by the way, the member of the ICANN board, dissented on Friday afternoon. And he had a few different points for dissenting, at least of which was he was concerned about the inappropriate nature of the material. But then he felt that it would, the decision to enable .xxx would be an incitement to fracture the group. And, that sounds pretty scary. We can have a situation where the group is fractured, and isn't the government, the U.S. government or the British government, don't we have an interest in ensuring that the security and stability of the banking system continues? Because, Egypt, which is probably as far as a Middle Eastern country, has probably one of the most robust internet networks out there in the Middle East. And they're able to shut down the internet for days and days and days. If we go back to the Stone Age, if the internet were shut down in the United States, the United States and other Western countries are much more reliant on daily functions. You think there's a big interest. So, is Sadowski right? Is this going to fracture the internet?
So, first of all, George did not take a position on the content or the appropriate nature of things.
That's what you said.
He said, I said I'm liberal with regards to my views on content. So, in terms of fracturing of the internet, obviously that's something you should all be concerned about, and not just ICANN. And for there to be a fragmenting of the internet or a fracturing of the internet, there would have to arise an alternative DNS that would be widely up. And to do that would require overcoming an enormous amount of inertia that we've tried in the past. They don't work. And that's because, the current system does work, and it works pretty well despite all the challenges that are out there. The second thing I would point out is that, from a technological perspective, not a technology, but what I'm told is that there is no material difference between, on the internet, logging at the top level and logging at the second level, which is widespread and random. There is already logging at the top level, for example, a number of countries lock the country code for Israel. The concern about fragmenting, the last thing I said, the concern about fragmenting the internet isn't just limited to what I can, but it also comes up when there are governmental seizures of domain names and portals to block name resolution, for which, in the context of content for sites that are in high demand, create an incentive to try to establish an alternative. So I'm not sure if that's a decision, both from a technical and how to see it.
Plumbing bubbles?
When you talk about trying to preserve what's working, we want to make sure that every time you visit a website, it actually goes to the website. Not that sometimes it goes there, sometimes it goes somewhere else. In other words, when you travel, the websites you went to, the emails you sent and received should work the same whether you happen to be using an ISP here in the United States or one in Beijing. And a fracturing of the web would be where the web behaves differently depending on where you are. The bad news is, some of that happens now. China became so impatient with ICANN for not delivering Chinese character domain names that they added their own. They took the route from ICANN every morning and appended three or four of their own top-level domains and ended all Chinese. Well, we've sort of fixed that up. Okay, now we are allowing Chinese. We're going to try to stop that fragment. Israel did the same thing because they wanted not more Hebrew characters in the domain name. So by ICANN delivering on what it is that registrars and users and countries need, we can satisfy the customers to the extent that they don't fracture that core root of the internet. We can do that to maintain the availability and integrity of the system. but to suggest for a minute that there can't be an alternate. Nothing else would ever work. I think that doesn't really work. And engineers will tell you that the ISPs, the Internet Service Providers, who help you to resolve the domains every morning, they're capable of a lot of things. If the government tells them to block something, they will. If the government, like China, told them to add Chinese top-level domains, they did. And the Internet didn't blow up. So there's quite a bit that's done at the engineering level when we use the Internet. What we're talking about today is not so much plumbing, but policy making. And that's where governments insist on being listened to. They insist on being listened to when it comes to policy making. All the governments are looking in the rearview mirror, and they see XXX going down the road behind them, go away. They're guaranteed that when I look through the windshield, you see 400, 500 new top-level domains coming later this year. And a lot of it will be just as controversial as about XXX, maybe worse. And the governments insist upon a process where if they have a unified objection, that new top level of pain comes to the windshield, but that's going to be a bug on the windshield, not on the rear view
mirror. And to stay on that very point, I mean, I think the board of the academy a lot harder. It was, if the view of the act is to impose the delegation of the strain, they can provide that directly to the board. They don't have to go through the objection process. And the ICANN board will have, you know, will have to take that into consideration, just like it does with any gap. So there is a, you know, present or my standard now, it's that when the act applies, not always, it's harder to, you know, create from the board more factors for that. It provides very clear advice. It ends up letting you very clear advice to do or not do. So you think the U.S. could, or the CAC itself in this round on this particular issue, was modeled? It reflected a myriad of views. It was not a unanimous. Well, can you figure that out by yourself? From the community, they don't identify the art, which is another important thing. To the extent that there are objections for public policy, our hope is that the GAC will be transparent on how it reaches you and who supports it. There were a handful of letters, Stephen Conroy, the Prime Minister, Minister in Australia, sent a letter to my CEO in Florida. Scorecard and a lot of edits to the guidebook address changes that were not opposed by the government earlier that has altered the application of the government. That'll be open for a month from April 15th to May 13th. On May 20th, we're proposing to have another draft board meeting to go over the remaining differences. May 30th, we will post the final guidebook. And then on June 20th, board and the board would take a vote. And that was what was adopted in the resolution on HLB in San Francisco. Obviously, it's subject to change. It's for a discussion with that.
The very one asked about was the timeline. I think of it more as a time box. A time box, that's what the board approved last Friday. It was overshadowed by triple X, but the board said we're going to put everything in a box and we're going to vote on it on June the 20th. And if there's anything I know about governments, they don't like to be put in a box. The only thing that's whole, get all your input in, because on April the 15th, we're going to turn over to you exactly what we're going to do, no more, no less. If that 30-day comment period is insufficient to accommodate what the government's concerns are, and these governments are concerned about primarily law enforcement, consumer protection, they want to have an objection process that makes sense. I'm not suggesting that GAC has figured that out either. They did make a lot of progress last Thursday, but we need an objection process that works. And I think the governments have a somewhat incoherent position on how to stop what they call market power. But Tim, that's got to be worked out. To just declare it's going to be 30 days, and that's it on June 20th, we're voting to go, implies that, well, governments get your legs in now because we're going to draw the line and bring closure to it. And I do think that the statement that we're going to bring closure risks getting I can't close down the government's not supporting anymore.
Just to be clear, this is not a declaration. This was worked out in court with the feedback chair. So it's not, the GAC and the board has been very accommodating to you.
So I guess, since we're in the Congressional Independent Caucus Advisory Committee, and we're trying to figure out at least the branch of government that's represented here, their input into this process. I mean, NTIA at the Department of Commerce interfaces with ICANN. But how does, in these timelines you're talking about, how does Congress kind of say, let's look at the timeline. If you see something coming down the road, you certainly don't want it to be in our rearview mirror, as Steve said, the .xxx is in our rearview mirror. Well, how does Congress try to see stuff coming, before it hits the windshield and actually influence that? Or not?
2005, look at your timeline, look at up there earlier, that is when the United Nations really woke up. They held a special worldwide conference, the Tunis Summit, where they declared all the principles that they'd like to see reflected in internet governance. And of course, they were taking a firm aim at the U.S. role. At that point, the two leaders of the Internet Caucus, Tim's organization here on the Hill, Congressman Scott Trump, and all the congressmen who will craft a House-Senate joint resolution, HCON 268, and it was unanimously approved in November of 2005. It declared a bunch of whereas, where Congress was giving the sense that the private sector-led model was fantastic and the notion of internationalizing ICANN was appropriate. And it ended up with one resolve clause that said, therefore, the authoritative root server should remain physically located in the U.S., and that the Secretary of Commerce should maintain oversight of ICANN so that ICANN can continue to manage the day-to-day operation and be responsive to Internet stakeholders worldwide. So that was Congress laying into the resolution, asserting sort of appreciation for the private sector model, but at the same time saying that it needs certain elements need to stay in the United States, or certain elements need to be protected by the U.S. That's a reflection on Congress wanting to protect our economic interests and about protecting the private sector leadership role from the threat that I think the United Nations poses.
But
now, I don't think we need that.
That's kind of a very macro issue, first of all. That's not like seeing a bug coming at the windshield. That's a very macro issue. And secondly, Congress has stripped itself of the ability to have investigations in this Congress. So that said, looking at the timeline, how does Congress interface within this process?
information was signed. It was a hearing of judiciary. I wanted to look carefully to see, is ICANN properly protecting consumer protection issues, trademark protection? And Christina can speak to that. The Congress has an oversight role. If it's concerned about whether trademark counterfeiting on the web is so rampant that we need to take a look at solutions, I highly doubt that ICANN becomes the solution. After all, ICANN just manages the label printing. They don't manage the counterfeit and the content and the fraud that happens on the Internet. So it would be a mistake to think that looking into bad behavior online is going to be a trail that leads to ICANN. It probably won't. At the same time, ICANN needs to be as helpful as it can as governments try to protect citizens from fraud and abuse.
To see what that oversight function look like. Is that hearing that the strongly written letters go back to having resolution? But
I actually wanted to respond to a different point. And that is namely, I think that there are owners of trademarks and copyrights who actually pretty strongly to speak. And if ICANN is going into this process where they're going to essentially open up the floodgates to new GTLDs, they've been told time and time and time and time and time again what the ramifications are going to be, both economically and politically. They've said, we'll fix it. They haven't. I would actually like to differ that they're not responsible for it. Where that translates into an oversight function, I think that's hard to say. But what I can say is that if there's an interest there, something will have to happen fairly quickly.
Sure. So, Congress has been in this administration and the prior administration has been very helpful in supporting the multi-stakeholder model. And Congress clearly has a role in, you know, oversight with the TIA and making sure that the TIA is participating effectively in the multi-stakeholder model. Unilateral, or sort of U.S. Legislation or regulation of ICANN with that underline the multi-stakeholder model and the fact that well, other countries use these things, you know, for example, or for evidence that the U.S. government did us before and everything that associated the Internet is a global resource and it needs to be there globally and not just in the interest of the United States. But we make difficult decisions. You know, the new GPLD program has been around since 2005. There were two special, in addition to the GSO policy, for launching the GPLDs. There were two special working groups on just on trademark protection. The trademark protections that have been adopted are many and much more robust than exists on any other existing GPLD. And to please everyone, now if there are people from civil society who disagree with some of the proposals that inappropriately strengthening or doing additional rights, there are trademark owners who would love to have additional protection. The fact is, we're happy to provide this input to anyone. There are pretty stringent protections there, and I think the trademark owners to protect themselves. It's also, it's still the subject of the legislation. Yeah, but to say that distorts the history of an effort that ICANN and the multi-stakeholder community come up with appropriate steps. In doing something that was called for in the original Green Light papers, which was to introduce competition at the registry level. That's what the GSO told us to do, and that's what we can do. I think Marilyn had a follow-up question on the ecosystem, and do you have any questions from SEC?
Tim, if I can on the protection part, let's keep in mind that when somebody prints a label, it's up to Christina's clients to get protection, but they have to pay for it. They want to protect their name or trademark Coca-Cola and whatever I have, .xx.soda.food, to buy it, and I can charge whatever I want. There's no regulation on the price of that name. Maybe I don't buy it, but I just hope that if someone else tries to get Coca-Cola, I'll sue them. Then you have to spend the money suing and pursuing the mechanisms. So to call it protection, I think, is fair. It is protection. It comes with a price. The question is that price appropriate? Is there adequate protections that don't literally turn business models into leveraging defensive registrations? And I think the government is real concerned about that. I think they're not done making themselves heard on how they want that process to be changed.
So next time before meeting the board members of the financials, I say I have to spend another couple $1,000 to register the domain names, because I could try to serve a trademark, right? I could say, hey, that GetNetWise is my trademark, and you can't use that. That's going to be a heck of a strong word, very sharp. But the fact is that I could just get the domain for $30 and buy it, and that would be easier than actually pick up my phone to call my lawyer. If he answers, that's $500, and then that stops the process. So that's pretty much your standard. Marilyn, do you have a system question?
Just that it sort of suggests that ICANN is the center of internet governance, and that's simply untrue. ICANN has a technical coordination role limited to the DNS and some other related technical functions. There are other actors who, in the ecosystem, as Marilyn calls it, who have a much broader role, in some ways a more important role, and who are at least as integral to the continuing success of the Internet. These include the Internet Society, the Internet Engineering Task Force, the IETF, the IAB, regional Internet registries, which are the bodies that actually allocate IP addresses once we ship them to them and set policies for those in the region. The W3C, there are a whole number of gamut. And some of them do participate in the ITU, in the UN system as well, and the UN, or sorry, the ITU, in fact, knocked over at the Fiduciary Conference, all for collaboration among all these actors, including itself, which were in favor of, recognizing each organization's substantive expertise and role, which sometimes leads to clashes with the ITU, for example, standards of issue. There were the IETF was also developing a standard IET for society that they wanted to take that over. And hopefully that will resolve itself in favor of the IETF, because they're the ones that have requisite responsibility. But you're right, Ed, we are a piece of it, and we are there's a plenty of robust governance things like we're only piece of it. There are many others who are absolutely we have a question from Mr. Corwin and one over here. I think we'll see how we go.
Thank you.
actually the exact opposite. What we hope to have going forward is more GAC involvement in the process early on, and not just at the end. But to the extent that there are concerns, I don't think the last timeline has been put up. I'll mention those because we are going to put out for comment the changes that made in light of being with the GAC. So the work that the volunteer community does is extraordinarily important. Has gotten us this far. And the last thing is the board has been very careful not to change any of the policies which were set by focus on issues of implementation.
Chris, in that during, for example, at every IGN meeting, the Janus of Council meets with the Government Advisory Committee, and I think there was a very clear recognition coming out of the Brussels meeting between the GAC and the board that this development policy in silos does not work and cannot continue. And I think one of the difficulties we're going to face going forward is trying to figure out, given that under the bylaws, the GAC can only give advice to the board and not to the GNSO, how the GNSO in that policy development process gets advice from the GAC or gets signals from the GAC of this is an issue we care about. You all need to kind of keep in mind what our general framework is and ensuring that as the process goes forward, those interests are reflected. I do think, though, that one thing we're going to probably look at the next big issue that comes down the pipeline is whether or not this whole working group model of volunteers really can work for every issue and whether there are certain aspects to issues or certain aspects to it that you just have to take a step back and say, okay, on this particular issue, we need to formally request government advice earlier on, or we need to figure out how this particular community that may not be at the table because they either don't know or they don't have the time to volunteer, how their interests are going to be affected. So I would just put that down as a marker as an issue that I'm sure we'll be talking about
here. Volunteer fatigue is very real. Those of us who are at that 8-day meeting last week, all of them look pretty fatigued here tonight. But let me suggest, Phil, that it's a little mischaracterization to say that the government just came in late. It was 2007. The government's logged in a letter with a bunch of principles that they want ICANN to take a look at for implementing new top-level domains or TLDs. Well, so they weren't late. They've been in 2007 before our organization even came up with our recommendations to the board. But let me not just absolve the government of any responsibility, because while they were not late, they were lightweight. They didn't put details on it. They didn't stick around to come to the meetings to see whether their principles were being followed, as Christina and all of us in the volunteer community were putting meat on those bones to come up with recommendations. So I fault the GAC for sort of taking a log over the transom and wait there. They need to stay as engaged as they can be in front of their representative and someone else. The current system, not working so well. We've got to do better as we move into a multi-stakeholder environment.
And you say we as a... When you say we...
We, as the private sector, wants to maintain a role. Remember what happens if the IT and the IGF take over. At that, every country puts a flag on the table and votes too. We don't even get a vote for the private sector if the UN takes over. And by the way, the U.S. gets how many votes? One. The same number as every other country. So when I say we want to make it work, we want to make a multi-stakeholder, private sector-led model work, and I can't make the government happy with that model so they continue to support it.
So two things on that. One is the bylaws already call for and that's the right thing. Else, it's still currently a panel organization. I can receive a lot of criticism over Steve mentioned the reviews under the affirmation commitments we're undergoing, and all of which will help us do better. Well, what's important to consider when you're hearing a lot of criticism is what is the alternative? And there are two alternatives. One is it goes to a U.S. governmental agency, which the rest of the world will reject. The other as it goes to something like the ITU. And if you don't like settlement rates, you really have to worry the ITU doing internet governance. We had a question here. Oh, yeah, that was here.
So I just wanted to bring up back to this chart of CCTLDs versus GTLDs and how the governments interact in a different way in the CC space versus the generic space. And so when you take a look at CCTLDs around the world, those two-digit codes are allocated. Each country, give or take, has their own, and they manage it the way that they see fit. And so if you go out there and trademark holders or brand owners go through this, it's a pretty painful exercise because if you want to do business, if you're by way of example, there's a lot of different things you can look at here, but if you are Coca-Cola and you want to sell Coca-Cola in various countries around the world, and you want to have a web address where people can go log in and learn about Coca-Cola, I'm not sure, is it or something like that, you have to go through a completely different process, oftentimes in different countries, and sometimes countries shut down their GTLDs for months at a time because it's summer holidays, or they just don't. They just don't have anybody to run it that week. Sometimes, you know, they change the rules, so what you could have yesterday, you can't have tomorrow. And if you, you know, take that sort of to the, you know, if the ITU or the UN takes over running up the generic space, it's, yeah, you're going to have quite a few problems that we won't even begin to know how to solve.
So, to sum up, you're basically saying the option is just have the ITU, the UN, the United Nations list. That's what's on the table. If you don't like it, how are you going to do with the United Nations? Is that fair?
Yes.
Okay. Question here.
Folks up here are experienced in that, but timing is everything. And optics really do matter. Last fall, the United Nations General Assembly voted to extend this Internet Governance Forum, or IGF, for another 5 years. And for those of you who don't know, the IGF is run by Economic and Social Development part of the UN, which we tend to think is the good part of the UN, whereas the ITU, the International Telecommunications Union, we call the bad part of the UN, the ones who manage all the rates and rules. So the IGF was extended for 5 years, but China insisted that there be a clause in there that says that we're going to reform the way it works. We want to come up with new rules about how the agendas are set for the IGF. Maybe rules about how many countries show up. There's even some discussion that they'd like to change the way that the proceedings go. Maybe they issue declarations or statements at the end that would have to be voted on. Bad thing about that is that in a UN event, only governments get to vote. But they're really focusing tightly, China and its allies, on this notion of U.S. control of the critical internet resources. And I think that we have to work really hard to show that that doesn't exist. There isn't control. There's responsible stewardship by the United States government, stewardship over the INA function. And as the first signatory to the affirmation of commitments, stewardship over the transparency and accountability of ICANN. Other nations are invited to join in helping to hold ICANN accountable and participate. The U.S. has got to push back on any implication here that we are unilaterally asserting control. We are, in fact, protecting the multi-stakeholder model. And we're going to need to find some allies around the world to stand up to China. One way to find allies is to be careful not to dismiss what they want when it comes to things like censorship, consumer protection, and law enforcement. So we're in a delicate balance right now. Can I ask you a quick question?
Your question, Ms. John, has your question been asked already? Or? Yeah. Yeah. Can you repeat the last question?
Part of my previous answer did you not hear? We do not want to do anything to assert U.S. control. You would just ask the question, what would happen? Is there any discussion of whether the U.S. would block XXX from going into the room same time, we're trying to tell the world we're a responsible steward of a private sector led multi-stakeholder.
I saw that because I can see how, if let's say, God forbid, we were to do that, the United States government were, is there any mechanism by which the U.S. could do that?
There's a mechanical mechanism that,
is the mechanism.
When changes are made to the root table could fit on an index card. It's a list of 270 top level domains and the IP address where you go to find them. No big deal. But every day there's roughly one change on that table because somebody changes their main server. Well, when .xxx is finally approved and the contracts are signed, ICANN will say to the IANA function they have in there in the circle, will say, this has been verified and validated. Please add that xxx's get resolved by the company called ICANN. At that point, the U.S. Commerce Department does have an oversight role and they check. It's a clerical check to make sure that that string and that address are going to work properly. And that is entirely clerical. It just doesn't get in the way. It tries not to pass judgment over who Brazil uses for its domain name server or Australia. Get out of the way and just make sure it's technically sound. As long as it's technically sound, the U.S. government doesn't get in the way. This gentleman is asking hypothetically if several months from now there was still so much intimate attention, would the U.S. government threaten not to put triple X on it? And again, my answer is I sure hope not.
I guess one last question from the show period. And do you identify yourself? I understood what you meant with the reference to China, but ICE has been taken down. The main thing is going to fund the international action for U.S.-based registries that are charged to have names associated with illegal conduct removed from the registry. And that is within the jurisdiction of ICE is a party in U.S. jurisdiction that's exercised within U.S. jurisdiction. ICANN's policies are not exhaustive. Obviously, the U.S. government, states, and the federal government have additional laws that apply to them, and they can enforce them. Whether or not that's going to be effective over the long run, I think is a question that should be asked. A lot of these just pop up. Different domains later. It doesn't do anything to get at the offensive conduct because the servers still exist with the illegal materials services. There are some also competitive kind of with respect to point count, which is related because it codifies that, but also has a mechanism for dealing with offshore names infringing conduct. Again, the question there is how effective will it be? There are technical experts who have strong concerns that it not only be effective, but will also create adverse consequences in the sense that it will create incentives for users in the United States to move their name servers. Insecure name servers abroad, so not only are they going to them to get to WikiLeaks or Pirate Bay or Amazon, they're also going to these foreign name servers to get to the bank, which subjects them to potential discretion and acts and be applicable. Do you have any comments on the interplay with Fish and the Shoe and the high seizures and quick and not all. Just see this.
Now, thanks to him, when Churchill made his quote about Russia, he added it at the beginning, but he said, but perhaps there is a he in Russia, and that he is what is in their self-interest. And that's the same question about the U.S. government. Let's say our interest is protecting our economic engine and preserving that law. So our government will take action against websites hosted here, registry records set that are here. If they think counterfeit or fraud is happening there, and it has nothing to do with IT at that point. Jamie's right that it could chase people's hosting services and registries offshore. That's not good for economic interests. And then if you ask yourself, what is ICANN's economic interest? What is ICANN's self-interest? They still think that it ought to be a little less gung-ho, all about TLD expansion, and being sticking to its mission of preserving the security and stability of the Internet. Those are balanced needs. And in the self-interest of ICANN, you constantly have to keep both in mind. And ICANN is not taking a role at the seizures, and nor should they.
In terms of the self-interest of ICANN, just to clarify, it's not ICANN, the organization with 130 employees, that is acting out of self-interest. It is ICANN, the organization with 130 employees, is seeking to implement what the GSO unanimously recommended back in 2006 or 2007.
Well, I just wanted to comment from really the CCTLD perspective as well, and kind of where the government's come into play on things like takedowns. There's a couple of things in the registries that our software operates in the Middle East. When we configure those registries, they give us blacklists essentially of domain names that cannot be registered. While it's more difficult to control content, and that's always a struggle, those governments have set up their policies and procedures so that certain words are not able to be registered, or certain labels, to use Steve's analogy. And then within Australia, the Australian namespace is interesting. It's actually grown significantly over the past decade, but it's also a pretty restricted namespace for a country code. And so in order to get a domain name in Australia, you have to be an Australian business entity, or you can be an international entity, but you have to go through a process that proves that you're doing business in Australia. And the same applies to individuals and nonprofits, et cetera, et cetera. And so there are safeguards in place to ensure that the people that get through and get a domain name are validated and have those. But should they slip through the cracks, the Australian government, FAUDA, which is the regulator, you can report to them that, you know, this is not an Australian entity or not an Australian citizen, and they will take down those sites as well.
Again, I read that Department of Commerce and FCIA and Larry Strickman were able to join us today, but I think just in closing, I could just read what I was to make some pretty sharp comments. He said he's skeptical that the addition of the new XXXDA will provide any additional protection for children, rather it's likely to encourage confusion. And then he also said, the U.S. is considering appropriate responses to ICANN's action. So, not that I'm in a hurry to know that ICANN briefing, but we're going to be back here in a little while. I really want to thank all the panelists who have come so far away. Thank you so much. And within a few hours, I'll post the audio of this on our Twitter account at Net Caucus AC. So the Twitter account is Net Caucus AC. Thanks so much. Thank you, Tim. Great job.